After I healed, I came up with an idea to record a solo mix CD to prepare the world for my next solo album, HNIC Part 2. Alchemist and I traded ideas. I came up with the name Return of the Mac, as in a person coming back for revenge with a Mac 10 gun. Al came up with all sorts of samples from black 70s movies, because our plan was to give the whole mix CD a retro feel, like the soundtrack to an old flick. While we were busy recording, Lloyd Banks released his second solo album, Rotten Apple. The album was hot, but a lot of people hated on it like they hated on Blood Money. It was obvious that a lot of people wanted to see G-Unit fail. Or was it that maybe we were just too arrogant to realize our own creative faults? Chapter 13. Return of the Mac. Hey yo, the hood broke my heart into pieces. Dunny streets took my dreams and shattered them and turned me to a creature, monster money. Got me not giving a fuck. All I care about is music and who I gotta cut with the Mac Uzi 47. Pick a weapon, a million ways to die. My 2-5 will end it. Bang on them. Summer of 2006, Brooklyn, New York. I began filming an independent movie, Blackout, out in Flatbush. My role didn't have too many lines, so the director, Jerry Lamoff, told me to improvise. The second day on set, I shot a scene with Jeffrey Wright, who was one of my favorite actors. After filming rap, I connected with 50 Cent's video director, Dan the Man, to shoot a paranoid, psychotic, grimy video for my mix CD song, Mac 10 Handle. Bloody couch and mirror stabbings, hallucinations of Satan, and some guy in a Michael Myers mask. No jury, no half-naked females, no fashion show. The video was an overnight success on the internet, with over 400,000 views in 3 days. It was completely against the grain. I wanted to show 50 my work ethic and how I could create a huge buzz on my own. I was trying to spark his interest in signing me as a solo artist and releasing HNIC Part 2 under the G-Unit brand. But before I stepped to him with the idea, I wanted to show him what I can do. I always had a complex about my teeth. I didn't smile in pictures or in front of females because I had a slight gap between my 2 front teeth. And after so many years of smoking cigarettes and weed, my teeth were staying yellow. Plus, I had 2 pointed incisors that looked like fangs on either side of my front teeth. I believed that those sharp pointed teeth were a trait from my mom's side of the family because many Caucasians have those 2 sharp pointed fangs. One day, when I get enough money, I'm gonna fix my teeth, and I'm gonna have a pearly white Hollywood smile, I tell Kiki. Yes, please, she say. I love you and all, but damn. While Havoc and I were enjoying the success of The Infamous in 1995, I found out from Twin and Draws that Nas had a nickname for me that he used behind my back. He and his boys called me Rat Boy, because my 2 front teeth looked like a rat's. It was funny, but deep down, it made my complex worse. So after shooting the Mac 10 Handle video, I asked Kiki to find an oral surgeon who could give me a beautiful smile. Kiki set up an appointment with Dr. Rizzo, whose office was 5 minutes from my New Jersey townhouse. If it's one thing that I was a punk about, it was going to the dentist. Needles in my mouth, drilling, root canals, fuck all that. But 1 month and $20,000 later, I looked like a new man, smiling every chance that I got. It was the best $20,000 I ever spent in my life. To all the fellas who are listening to this, and all the rap boys across the map, fight back. Fix your jibs instead of wasting your money on foolishness. And Nas, Thank you. You inspired me once again to be all I could be. Love you, boy. Right after I got my pearly whites, 50 called a meeting at his office for the entire G-Unit roster. When Havoc and I showed up, Olivia was there, along with Banks, Yayo, MOP's manager, and Young Buck was on the speakerphone. Mace never signed to the label, because Puffy was asking for too much money to buy him out his existing Bad Boy contract. 50 started the meeting. I called this meeting today because I want to let y'all know that I've been spending a lot of money to promote you all on tour and several other expenses, and I haven't been seeing a profit on a lot of my investments, 50 said. Plus, I heard that some of y'all ain't happy. Then he turned to Olivia. For starters, I spent all kinds of money on your hairstylist, makeup artist, stylist, studio time, and I don't see you making any hits for a good album. Olivia tried to make excuses, but they weren't good enough. 50 then turned to MOP's manager. And as far as MOP, I got y'all up in my house studio for several months, and I don't see any work being done. Mobb Deep did over 40 songs within a few weeks before we even inked the deal. It's been almost a year, and I haven't seen any effort from you guys. MOP's manager tried to make excuses, but they weren't good enough. Then he turned to Banks. And I don't know what your problem is. You got the work ethic, you make good songs, but you act like you don't want to do the promotional work it takes to sell the album correctly. Now, I know you had some personal issues with your family lately, but I lost my mom's, Banks. I know what it feels like to lose a family member. That didn't stop me from doing what needed to be done, though. Banks had recently lost his father and was mourning, so he probably hadn't done a lot of the necessary promo. I started to feel uncomfortable listening to the discussion between 50 and Banks. It sounded personal, and I felt like it was none of Mobb Deep's business, but 50 obviously wanted us to hear it. I heard you're upset with your album sales, 50 continued. Well, I got on songs for all of y'all albums. I wrote choruses, got into videos. It's up to y'all to lyrically perform at y'all best and do the work it takes to market and promote the projects. I'm not going to do it all for you. As a matter of fact, I'm not doing any more features on any of y'all songs or videos because I'm carrying all the weight. Y'all have to start pulling your own weight. Yo, Buck, you there? You heard what I said? Buck mumbled through the speakerphone.
Yeah, I'm here, 50. Don't worry, 50. I'm the cleanup man,
Buck said.
I got hits on this album. We good.
That was some real disrespectful, cocky shit he just said, I thought to myself. What is he trying to say, that his shit is better than 50 Cent, Mobb Deep, Yayo, and Banks? Buck used the wrong choice of words as far as I was concerned. Then 50 continued. Yayo was locked up, and his album was on hold until he got out. He missed a lot of big promotion while he was gone, but he did what he had to do when he got home. Yayo cut in and said, I'm not complaining about album sales, man. I'm good. Whatever needs to be done, I'm doing it. Then 50 said, look at what P just did with his video on the internet. He shot a video for a mix CD song on his own. He's not waiting for me to help him. He's pushing himself, making himself hot. Niggas need to be doing shit like that. Then Banks came out of left field and said, what? This meeting is all about me? Because you seem to be focused on me the most. No, it's not all about you, 50 said. I'm talking to everybody. But you need to start doing your promo work before you start complaining about your album sales. I want everybody in here to look down under the table and tell me what you see. Everybody looked under the table, confused. I don't see nobody rocking G-Unit sneakers, 50 said. I see Gucci, Louis, Fendi, Timberland, but I pay you endorsement checks every month to wear G-Unit, 50 made that endorsement deal with Yayo, Banks, Buck, and maybe Olivia before Mobb Deep came around. We weren't a part of that deal, so he wasn't talking to us. From now on, I'm dead in that deal, and you won't get your checks anymore, 50 told him. So y'all can forget about that. Wow, I thought. If 50 would have gave us that deal, I would have worn G-Unit to sleep at night, and in my casket. Buck mumbled over the phone once more. I got this, 50. Me and Spider-Lope, we going hard. I'm the cleanup man, trust me. Buck needed to shut the fuck up and listen to what was being said. He needed to hand in a good album instead of talking all that cleanup man shit. This nigga frontin', Banks jumped up and said. He ain't happy. Ain't nobody happy with this label. Banks slammed his fitted hat on the table and sat back in his chair. Oh yeah? 50 looked at Banks and said, you want to bounce like Game and start your own label? I got you. I'll call my lawyer and tell him to get you a deal over at Geffen, and you could do your own thing from now on. Banks stormed out the meeting. A week later, 50 dropped Olivia and M.O.P. from the label. I wanted to ask 50 to put H&IC Part 2 out on G-Unit, but after that meeting, I didn't feel right about asking him. I didn't want to get shot down or put him in an awkward position by having to tell me he wasn't interested in doing my solo album. So I kept it to myself for the time being. When 50 acknowledged that he liked what I was doing with my mix CD video, it added fuel to my already existing fire. Alchemist and I finished Return of the Mac, and I plan to release it through DJ Who Kid as a street mix CD for free. But then I got a call from Bob Perry, who'd been missing in action since Free Agents, and was now working with Koch Records, offering $200,000 to buy Return of the Mac. I took that paper. $200,000 up front in one check? And I ran. When I told 50 how much I got for my mix CD, he was like, wow, how the hell did you pull that off? That's good. After I got that money, I shot 3 more videos for the mix CD, Stuck to You, New York Shit, and Seventh Heaven, featuring Un Pacino, a rapper from Ocean Village Projects in Far Rockaway, Queens, whom I had met through Twin. I released the videos one at a time, every few weeks. The buzz was strong for Return to Mac, and the press gave rave reviews for the Mac 10 Handle video. So Koch was ready to release the mix CD immediately. Alchemist and I did a photo shoot for the CD artwork, wearing classic mafia-style suits. I came up with the nicknames for Alchemist and myself, Bumpy Johnson and Dutch Schultz, old-time Harlem gangsters who went by the same names. Harlem rapper Cameron had been enjoying a successful run with his group, The Diplomats, a.k.a. Dipset. They dropped a bunch of hits on Jay-Z's Rockefeller Records, and the crew had 2 rising solo artists, Jewel Santana and Jim Jones. Right before Return of the Mac was released, Jim Jones put out a hit single titled Ballin'. Jewel Santana and Jim Jones were both on Koch Records, so we were label mates. Alchemist was also signed to Koch. Return of the Mac was released and sold about 50,000 units, just what I needed to get my buzz going for H&IC Part 2. A month later, I got a call from a dude named Scientific, whom San Scarfo introduced me to, telling me about this company, Voxonic, that wanted to start a record label. Voxonic had a patent for some type of new voice translation technology where they could take song lyrics and translate them into any language. He said that they were looking to promote the new technology through a record label, but didn't have any experience with the music industry and needed artists and somebody to help run the label. I told Scientific to set up a meeting with the owner so I could find out if it was worth my time. Later that day, Twin called and said that he, Godfather, and Ty Nitty were about to shoot a video for a song we did for a European compilation album. Twin said that the company gave him $5,000 cash for me to appear in the video, and he had the cash on him, Kiki and I bounced to Queensbridge, where the video was being shot in front of Havoc's old building. I parked a bulletproof Suburban on 21st Street and then walked over to meet everybody. On the block, I saw friendly faces that I hadn't seen in years.
Yo, what up, Thang?
My man Bumpy greeted me. The last time I saw Bump was when he had Worm on the back of his BMX bike and Worm shot his gun in the air trying to scare me. Bumpy got locked up after that and did like 6 years. I shot my scenes real quick because Kiki was waiting for me in the truck. She's not very sociable with people and doesn't trust anybody, so she fell back. While Twin, Bumpy, and Godfather walked with me back to my car, we saw Green Eyes walking towards us on 21st Street. I hadn't seen him since I stopped dealing with bars and hooks.
Yo, P, I need to speak with you real fast. What up, man?
He said. We stepped aside.
What's the word, man?
I asked.
Look, the nigga Preem is upset with you because you've been talking about him on your songs,
Green Eye said.
He has some niggas out here looking for you. I already told niggas that they gotta fall back because you my nigga, P. But just stop talking about all that shit in your songs.
While Green Eyes was talking, Bumpy and Twin walked over.
You good, Dunn? You good, P?
Bumpy asked.
What up with this nigga right here?
Yeah, it's all good, I said. We good.
Aight, just let me know, cause anybody front on you, Dunn, niggas gonna get fucked up out here.
Then Twin said,
Yo, you good, P? You sure?
Yeah, we just talking, chill, I said.
Then they backed up.
Green Eyes then said, Yo, you my nigga, P. You know I love you, man. Preem just feel like it's none of your business. So just leave all that shit alone, man. I'm out here, man. I'll see you later on.
I gave him a pound and then he left. Green Eyes was referring to my song, Rotten Apple, on Return of the Mac, where I got a line saying, If Pac was still alive, we'd be on the same team. We got bigger fish to fry than that bitch Supreme. I was referring to Tupac's relationship with E. Moneybags and Majesty, and how that would have eventually made us friends. I called Preem a bitch because he had E. Moneybags killed and got 50 shot up, so fuck Preem, simply put. You send niggas, I send them back in plastic. You send bitches, I send them bitches back pregnant, simply put. Godfather told me one day that some Supreme Team niggas was walking around the projects asking about me, saying they were gonna kill me. But I didn't know what he was talking about and didn't care. Now Green Eyes confirmed it. Oh well. See me when you see me, nigga. Twin gave me my $5,000, and Kiki and I left. My relationship with Kiki was getting a little better. After I caught those cheating messages on the phone, I became real cold-hearted. The G-Unit deal only made me worse. She probably thought I was cheating a lot, but 99% of the time, I was just working on music and kicking it with my boys. I'd rather chase money. I spent long hours in the studio and came home around 5 a.m. every day ever since Kiki and I was first together. It was a rare occasion for me to take a break, and a vacation was out of the question. Vacation? What's that? Working so hard, I was missing out on time with my kids and my woman. I used to bring my son Shaka with me to the studio and the office back when he was 3 years old, until 2002. When I started smoking and bullshitting again. I didn't want him around all that. Scientific hit me back and told me Voxonic offered to give me a 50-50 deal with a $400,000 advance and ownership of my masters. Vox also offered an ownership percentage of the company as well and an executive position at the label with a $5,000 per month salary and fully paid living expenses, which was worth an additional $5,000 per month. I told 50 about it, and he said, Yo,
How the hell do you be making all these crazy deals? That's amazing. Take it.
Looking over a rough contract, Mobb Deep's new lawyer, Evan Freifeld, had the same response as 50. He couldn't believe it. Evan wanted to make minor adjustments to the deal terms before I signed the contract, so he told me he'd contact me when it was ready to be finalized. After my call with Evan, I drove to the studio to see what was up with Hav. On the drive to Queens, I got an email that surprised me. It was Lindsay Lohan. She asked if I was in New York and said that I should come to a club in Manhattan later that night called Bungalow 8, where she'd be hanging out with a few of her girlfriends. So I hit her back and told her I'd meet her there. I had $20 in my pocket and zero in my personal account. I called my accountant, Artie Ert, and asked him to transfer $500 into my ATM account so I could have spending cash for the club. Mobb Deep kept all our real money in a business account, so we couldn't touch it. So when we wanted money, we'd make transfers through our account. It kept us from spending too much. Havoc wasn't at the studio, but our engineer Fly was there with Nice. I told Nice about Lindsay's invitation and asked him to come along. When 11 p.m. rolled around, we hopped in my bulletproof Suburban and stopped at the gas station to get gas plus some bread from the ATM. But when I checked my account, I still had zero. Sometimes the money transfers don't go through until the next day. Damn. I put 10 bucks in the bulletproof, enough to get there and back. Now I only had 10 bucks, and Nice had 20. Wow. We're going to an exclusive Manhattan club with 30 bucks to hang out with some million-dollar white chicks. Oh well. At least we're looking good. There were two black bouncers at the door, who I figured might recognize me. "What's up, man? It's Prodigy," I said. The bouncer looked at me like I was retarded. "Are you on the guest list?" he asked. "It's a private party." "I should be. Check it out. Prodigy from Mobb Deep." "Nah, I don't see you," the bouncer said after glancing at the list. "Sorry." "Yo, Prodigy, son. Mobb Deep. It's just two of us." I hated feeling like I had to beg or prove that I belong in the club. "Sorry, I can't let you in," he said, looking at me as if he couldn't care less. "I'm here with Lindsay Lohan," I said. "She's waiting for me." "Who?" "Lindsay Lohan," I repeated. "Can you please tell Lindsay that Prodigy's at the door? Thank you." The look on his face was priceless. Lindsay walked Nice and me through the packed club to her VIP table, where she had bottles of Grey Goose and Belvedere. Bungalow 8 looked like some tropical jungle type of shit inside, a predominantly white crowd sprinkled with blacks and Latinos. I've been there before with Alchemist. Lindsay's friends were wearing Mardi Gras looking white masks, drunk and dancing crazily to rap music. Lindsay introduced me to her assistant. We poured drinks and started dancing while Nice danced with one of the mysterious masked ladies. Another masked lady got behind Nice and had him in a sandwich. He looked over at me with the crazy Kool-Aid smile. After a handful of songs, Nice and I walked over to the bar so it wouldn't seem like we were drinking all of Lindsay's liquor. "Prodigy?" A young black bartender looked at me and asked. "Oh, shit. My favorite rapper. Yo, I love Mobb Deep, man. What can I get for you?" "Two shots of Hennessy on ice," I told him, since we were on a tight budget. "Man, I'm hooking you up with a bottle, man, on the house." The bartender hooked us up. I thanked him for the bottle. He saved us from looking stupid and walked back to the VIP. On the way, I bumped into RZA from Wu-Tang Clan. We were surprised to see each other. Then I got back to Lindsay. The ladies poured shots of Hennessy, and Nice started dancing with the same masked female. She lifted her mask real quick to get some air
and I saw it was Ashley Simpson, Jessica Simpson's younger sister. I told Nyx that he would know that he had a celeb on his hands. Then Lindsay pulled me back to her. I saw her looking at her BlackBerry after a while, and her mood changed. I asked her what was wrong, and she said, "This guy I used to mess with is fucking stalking me. I think he's in the club." "Oh, yeah? Well, let me know if you see him and we'll fuck him up," I said. "You good with me. I ain't letting nobody bother you if you don't want to be bothered. Just let me know." After another hour of drinking, dancing, and grinding on each other, we said our goodbyes. I don't know if Nice got Ashley's number, but regardless, we had fun that night. October 26, 2006. It was Alchemist's birthday, and Twin, Godfather, Ty Nitty, my cousin JM, JM's homeboy Rome, Alchemist, and I gathered at Al's Manhattan apartment to celebrate with a case of Heinekens, a case of Coronas, and a lot of Kush. Twin was pushing to go out, but Alchemist and I wanted to stay in the apartment and make music. Atlanta rapper Ludacris was having an album release party for his new singer, Sharifa, at the Show nightclub near Times Square.
"Come on, yo, it's Alchemist's birthday," Twin said. "Let's go out."
We rolled out three cars deep, Alchemist and me in my bulletproof Suburban, JM and Rome in JM's gold drop-top SL Benz, and Twin, Godfather, and Ty Nitty in a black Hummer H2. I usually snuck a 22 or a 25 caliber handgun into the clubs if there were only a few of us, but there were seven of us, so I left the pistol in the truck in the storage box between the driver and the passenger seats. Velvet rope surrounded the club's front entrance. A black doorman came over. "Yeah, what's up, man? Prodigy and Alchemist plus five," I announced. The doorman said to give him a minute. Then he walked inside the club. While waiting, I looked toward the street to my left and saw three plainclothes detectives from the hip-hop task force. I recognized them from the night they arrested me after the Blood Money release party at the Roxy. I didn't see the black cops. It was the white ones, who looked like military dickheads. I wanted to point them out to Alchemist and Twin, so they remember their faces. "Yo, don't look right now, but over to the left, you're gonna see three white dudes by a black car," I said. "That's the hip-hop cops." The doorman came back with a young white woman, who had a clipboard in her hand. "What's up, guys?" she said. "We're working on clearing VIP tables for you now. How many is it? Seven? I got three tables, and there's a one bottle minimum per table, so you have to buy three bottles, okay?" "How much are the bottles?" Alchemist asked. "And what if we don't want to drink?" "You have to buy a bottle in order to get a table. It costs $400 a piece," the lady said.
$1,200,
Alchemist and I said in unison. "To get into a party?" Al and I looked at each other. "I'm ready to bounce, man.
$1,200.
They're trying to play us." The lady came back after a few minutes with another offer. "It's really overcrowded in there, and we only have room for you guys in the VIP section," she said. "So I could let you in, but you have to buy at least two bottles. That's only $800. Come on, I know you guys got that." "Man, fuck this lame-ass party," Al said. "Let's go." We jumped in our rides and rolled out with my Suburban leading the pack, JM's Benz behind me, and the black Hummer behind them. A few blocks away, I got a call on my cell from JM. "Yo, the D's just pulled me over," he said.
"Word? You clean, right?" I asked.
Yeah, we good," he said. "Ain't nothing in here." "Okay, well,